So I want to start today by just talking about a little statement here, and I think we'll all identify with this statement, and here it is. It's five words. It's very easy to remember. You love you some you. No one thought that was funny. I thought it was really great the first time I heard that. Okay, let's try that again, and this time you can laugh like you think it's funny, okay? Please humor me. I have a very difficult job. So you love you some you. Don't you? Oh, it's so good. That actually stung worse than when you just didn't laugh, I think, actually. I find this to be a way by which I live my life. That I tend to walk through life, and if I'm really honest, I love me some me, you love you some you. In fact, my biggest problem with all of you is I'm trying to get you to love you some me, and you're trying to get me to love you some you. I'm not really sure if that works out correctly, but let's not break that down too much, all right? We all really like just living life with the filter of me and myself as the operating way in which we walk through the world, don't we? Yeah, that's kind of how we think, how we operate. I learned this when I started dating and then eventually got married to my wife, okay? I kind of came to this point. Before I started dating her, I'd lived in the same bachelor pad for like, I don't know, 4 years. And it's like by myself, okay? So it's just me. I could do whatever I want. I'll wash the towels however often, or in my case, not often, I really wanted to, okay? My wife still shudders when I tell her about how little I washed the comforter on my bed and all that kind of stuff, okay? But I could just do whatever I wanted, right? Like, that's not true. The law still applied to me. But I could do pretty much whatever I wanted. And I remember, like, you invite this person into your life, and strangely enough, you can't always do everything that you want and everything that they want, okay? At some point, you have to choose. And so I found myself choosing to be like, okay, I guess I'll set this one thing aside so we can go somewhere other than Applebee's, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, okay? And so you kind of set yourself aside, because that's what happens in relationships. And then we got married, right? And I learned, hey, if I want to stay married at some point, I'm going to have to say no to me so I can say yes to her, okay? Because it sounds so juvenile, it sounds so small, it sounds so petty to say, but you love you some you, and I love me some me. And when someone asks me to set that aside, that's really, really hard for me, okay? Think about this from your perspective, okay? Imagine that you just got a text as we kind of got started here, and let's pretend on that text was the sentence that no one ever wants to read on their phone, which is, hey man, can you help me move, okay? Now, immediately, your thought is probably a lot like mine, where you're like, actually, it's funny that you ask because I have a friend, and they have this very rare disease. In fact, I think they're the only person in the world that has it. And it turns out that the only place you can get treatment is in Anchorage, Alaska. So, and it's like today is the only day. It's like the last plane out of Vietnam. And so I got to get there. I'm really sorry. Maybe next time. Yeah? And if you own a truck, God help you, right? Because you get like 7 of those texts every week probably from people like, hey, can you help me move? Because we understand that's like a big deal, right? Like, that's a big sacrifice. I have a couple of friends, and I've helped them move 4 times, and I have no problem reminding them I've helped them move 4 times, okay, when things get a little difficult, because I love me some me, and I'm willing to bet that you love you some you. When you see a photo, it doesn't matter if there's 2 people or 20 people in the photo, if you're in that photo, who is the first person you look at in that photo? It doesn't matter if it's like someone else's wedding day, and it's the bride, and you're like, oh, how do I look in that? You know, like, it's just you kind of go to it, right? Because you love you some you, I love me some me. We've been talking about love, and we've been talking about how do we love people in the way that God asks us to love them, and we've been looking at this passage of Scripture where God lays out for us what it looks like to love people well. And in fact, even if you haven't been here, you've probably heard these words before. Even if you're not a Christian, you've probably heard these words before. Love is patient, we're told. Love is kind. It doesn't envy, it doesn't boast, it isn't proud. Last week we talked about how it doesn't dishonor others. And this week we move on to this descriptor of love, that love is not self-seeking. Love isn't selfish. A couple months ago, I heard a guy named Jeff Brody say this statement that I thought was just, like, immediately I just kind of stopped and I rewound it so I could listen again because I was like, wow, that's so profound. But he said, love is just talk until you sacrifice. Love is just talk until you sacrifice. Because we all kind of understand that it's really easy to talk the talk. And in fact, quite often, at least for me, I find that my talk outpaces my walk. Sacrifice is where the rubber meets the road when it comes to loving people well. The way I kind of framed it is sacrifice is what makes love a reality. Sacrifice is what makes love a reality. I was talking to my dad this week, and I don't even know how we got on this topic, but I think my dad did the typical dad thing where he's like, how are you guys' cars doing, you know, and stuff like that. And so I'm like, I don't know, they turn on and turn off, you know, the brakes work, you know, like no one's careening out of control, you know, like he's asking all these questions. And over the course of our conversation, somehow we started to talk about the car that I drove when I was in college and like ending high school when I first got my license. And my dad said this statement that was really odd to me. He said, yeah, son, one of my biggest regrets as a parent is saddling you with that Ford Taurus, you know, the family Taurus. I was like, Dad, you and Mom gave me a car, okay? Like, I can't complain. Like, the car worked. It functioned. I understand it's not the greatest car ever, okay? But, like, it's totally fine, okay? I have access for free to something everyone else would die for. Some of you hate me right now because you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe your parents did that, okay? And like, I'm like, Dad, seriously, you don't need to sweat it. And my dad is like legit, like, man, I just regret doing that. Or I regret saddling you with that car because it broke down like 5 years after we gave it to you. And I'm just like, Dad, seriously, you don't need to worry. But my dad, being a good parent, right, he says, man, sacrifice is what makes love a reality. And my dad and my mom both in different ways over the course of my 31 years on this earth have demonstrated to me that they love in a way that they are willing to sacrifice. They're willing to say no to themselves so me, so my younger sister are able to say, so they can say yes to us. Because that's what love does. Love is willing to sacrifice. Now, you love you some you isn't a new phenomenon in the world. In fact, it's been going on for quite a while at this point. And so today we're going to look at a story of Jesus talking with his first century followers about how we combat this whole you love you thing in our lives, how we can love people well. And what's interesting is we're going to capture this in a book of the Bible called Mark, a part of the New Testament. Now, a little history lesson for you. Mark is the cousin of a guy named Peter. And Peter was one of Jesus' 12 disciples. Peter, if you are Catholic, you actually believe Peter was the first pope of the church, okay? So Peter's kind of a really important person, really big deal, okay? Peter had a pretty common career path, which is fisherman turned pope. So he did not know how to read or write in the first century. And so we believe what kind of happened is Peter one day just found his cousin Mark and said, hey, Mark, I got a bunch of stories that I need to tell you about Jesus, and I just need you to pick up your pen and write them down for me. And Mark apparently had nothing better going on that day, so he's like, sure, why not? And so picks up his pen, and voila, we've got the Gospel of Mark, okay? This is a firsthand account of Jesus' life from one of the people that knew him the best. And Peter includes in his description of some things that he wants us to make sure that we know and that we understand about Jesus. Peter includes for us this story about how Jesus talked about love and how Jesus talked about sacrifice, okay? And here's how the story goes. Again, okay, so again, in Mark 10:32, Jesus took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him, okay? So in other words, what we're about to read happened more than once, okay? This is at least the second time. Jesus talks to his disciples, and he says, guys, we're going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law. Jesus often called himself the Son of Man. He's saying, guys, we're going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to be handed over to some people that are not a big fan of me. They will condemn him, condemn me, to death, and will hand him over to the Gentiles, to the Romans, who will mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him. Oh, that sounds like a great day, Jesus. Can't wait to go to Jerusalem. That's going to be a lot of fun. 3 days later, he will rise. Okay, now, I just kind of think that's kind of weird. Imagine you're at lunch today, you know, you're sitting at Wendy's or I don't know, wherever you're going. If you're lucky, you're going to Wendy's, okay? And you're sitting there and someone says, hey, I just want to let you know, I'm going to get spit on, mocked, beaten, flogged, and died. But don't worry, 3 days later, I'm going to resurrect. I'm like, great. That sounds awesome, guys, okay? So the disciples, I think, are just kind of like over their head, don't quite understand. And so we're told in the very next verse what happens. Then James and John, sons of Zebedee, those are two of his disciples, came to him, okay? Probably just want to talk to him and clarify, like, Jesus, you said a bunch of weird stuff right there. What's going on? Nope. They came to him and they said, teacher, we want you to do for us whatever you ask, okay? Hey, Jesus, that's really great about the dying and rising thing. You know, good luck with that. That sounds real, whew, man, that sounds really hard. You know, the other day, Peter asked me to help him move, and that was really challenging, so I'm not interested. But Jesus, you said this thing about leaving us, and Jesus, I don't think we've extracted every amount of what you're able to do for us out of this relationship yet, so we're wondering if you could do us a solid, okay? And in this moment, the disciples, I think, embody for us something that we often do, which is we know that we are in a really dangerous spot with regard to love when I start to look at the value of the people around me as being equal to what they are able to offer me. When you start looking at the people around you as somehow being a means to an end to get what you want, you are in a very dangerous place with regard to selfishness. Next month, I'm going to have been doing like full-time ministry for 10 years, which is kind of weird to think about. And I remember the church I worked at, I started this church with a couple friends, and I was the worship pastor at this church. I was like the creative arts leader person, worship leader person. And a couple years after the church started, the guy who started the church left to start a new church somewhere else. And I got asked to become the pastor of the church. So I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a bad idea for you. I'm only like 24, so you're ready to tank this thing, you know? And they're like, sure, why not? So you know, I went in and did that. And I remember in like my first month of taking on this new job, right, nothing has changed about me. I didn't get a new degree. I didn't, you know, have some expertise. I didn't take some course. Nothing magical or amazing happened to me, all right? But I remember in that first month or two, that experiencing several times someone would like come up to me and they would talk to me and they would take an interest in me and care about me in a way that they never did before, and nothing about me had changed, right? The only thing about me that had changed was my job. And now I went from being the guy who knows the guy to just the guy, right? And now I'm able to kind of exert some organizational force to accomplish different things and to do different stuff, right? And what I kind of felt weird and gross about that was people took an interest in me, but they were really interested in what I could do for them, right? They were kind of interested in the power I could exert on their behalf, and that just felt kind of gross and kind of skeevy and kind of weird and like really, really bad, right? And we've all been in experiences probably where we've experienced something kind of like that. And when we treat people in such a way, we devalue them, we dishonor them, we turn them instead of just people loved by God into people who can serve us. That is the ultimate you love you some you and I love me some me. And so Jesus, he plays along with the disciples. And so in the next verse, he says, what do you want me to do for you? He asked, and so they answer. Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. Jesus, you keep talking about having this kingdom. You keep talking about ushering in this kingdom. And Jesus, John and I, we would love to be on the front lines of being able to rule and reign along with you. And you know what, Jesus? We're going to be so nice, and we're going to be so great, we'll even let you decide who's number two and who's number three. You know, like, aren't we so great, right? And if I'm Jesus, I'm thinking, I got some number two for you right here. You know, like I am not that interested in that. But Jesus now starts to draw out of them, I think, something that he sees that could be a teaching moment. He says, guys, you don't know what you're asking. You do not understand. In fact, the question you ask demonstrates you don't understand the slightest thing about how my kingdom works. Because Jesus' kingdom is different than the one that we're used to. Jesus' kingdom is unique. James and John, and as we'll see, the other 10 disciples, they're really interested in riding Jesus' coattails to the top, and the reason they're interested in riding Jesus' coattails to the top isn't because they have some benevolent, deep, loving desire to help people. It's because when you sit at the top, you get a chance to get whatever you want. And you get a chance to treat people however you want. And you get a chance to accomplish and to experience whatever you want. It is the ultimate for a you love you, some you kind of person. But Jesus says, that's not how my kingdom works, guys. That's not how we operate here. Because what we often do, and what James and John are doing, is they're trying to shoehorn Jesus' kingdom into my kingdom, into our kingdom. And we kind of want to pretend like Jesus' kingdom is like going to Golden Corral or something, you know, and you've got like, I'll take some of that and some of that and some of that. Ooh, there's some green on that, so we'll leave that over there, you know. And we just kind of pick and choose the parts that we like. We discard the parts that we don't like, and we kind of assemble our own little Franken religion, you know. And the problem is that what specifically makes Jesus' kingdom so powerful and so transformational and so empowering is the idea that it is different than this world and that it operates on principles that are beyond this world. And what the problem is when we take like Jesus plus X, right? Jesus plus Y, a little bit of Jesus, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. The problem is we end up with the worst of all of them. And we end up discontented, unfulfilled, disappointed. And so Jesus sees a teaching moment. So he circles his disciples around, and he says to them, hey, can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? Okay, Jesus is like saying, hey, I'm going to die. You know, you ready to do that? And they don't understand what they're saying. So they say, sure, you know, we can. It was like the most arrogant thing ever, right? And then Jesus says to them, you will drink the cup I drink, and you will be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or my left hand, that's not for me to grant, right? That's God the Father's territory. I'm going to leave that to him. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. And so then when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John, right? Because that's exactly what happens when someone gets in the way of you loving you some you, right? You become angry, you become indignant, you become frustrated, you become irritated, you become annoyed because I'm entitled. Right, because this is my divine right. And so these other 10 guys, they catch wind and they become indignant and they become angry because the same question James and John asked was kind of the question they want to ask for themselves, you know? And so Jesus circles them up and he sees this is going off the rails. He calls them together. And he says, guys, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, the Romans, they lord it over them and their high officials exercise authority over them, at which point all the disciples are circled around, they're nodding their head, Jesus, that's exactly why we want to be one of those people. Not so with you. Jesus is the ultimate killjoy, right? It's like they're blowing up the balloon and Jesus is taking the little pin right to it, okay? All the wind is out of their sails right there because Jesus says that's not how it works. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. Jesus' kingdom, he will tell us, is marked by love. Right? And just a few weeks from this point, he's going to take his disciples, they're going to circle up around the table, and he's going to say, guys, here's a new command I give you. I want you to love one another as I've loved you. The world is going to know you're my followers because of the way you love each other. Jesus' kingdom is marked by love, and love, Jesus points out to us, is marked by sacrifice. Because love is just talk until you sacrifice. Some of us in this room, this could be a transformational concept because you're stuck in a relationship, or you're stuck in a marriage, or you're trying to parent your kids, or you're trying to lead your team, or you're trying to do whatever it is you're trying to do, and you just keep hitting up against that thing, right? And you keep getting frustrated, and you keep getting annoyed, And you can't understand why he acts that way. You can't understand why she acts this way, right? And the whole thing, you're just so angry, right? Because someone keeps getting in the way of you loving you some you. And Jesus' point is, hey, if you want to love people well, okay, if you want to experience my life in this world, it happens when you're willing to sacrifice. And the sad reality is some of us are going to be locked into relationships, situations, and circumstances that are never, ever, ever going to change until you are willing to say, I'm going to say no to me so I can say yes to you. I was talking to a friend this week. He gave me a phone call, and he's walking through a situation with some friends of his right now. And these two friends are married, and they've kind of invited him into their situation. They're having some trouble. They're kind of on the brink of divorce. And my friend called and was saying, hey, I imagine you've probably, you know, you've done ministry for a while now, so you've probably hit this before, you know, what guy advice for me, you know, it was kind of his thought. And one of the things that we talked about was how when we kind of stand before people and we get married, right, we vow, we say our I do's, every one of you, I would imagine in this room who is married, who's made that commitment, and I understand not all of us have, and you know, maybe this is a limited example, but when you take your marriage vows, right, you stand up in front of people. And every marriage ceremony I've ever been a part of, every wedding, there's always some element when people take vows to one another where they say, hey, I anticipate at some point in the relationship, this is going to suck. Right? That's the, we like the for better, right? But we also say for better or for worse, right? We actually anticipate the idea that at some point in the relationship, things are going to get hard. We anticipate that in the relationships that shape and change and transform us in the best ways possible, even when they stink, even when they're hard, even when they're difficult, right? We actually anticipate the idea that at some point I understand love is going to sacrifice. Love is going to lead me to say no to myself so I can say yes to you. Love is going to lead me to say no to myself so I can say yes to the relationship, because love is the most powerful and valuable resource and mechanism I have to help people connect to God and to transform and to change life in this world. And it happens, Jesus says, when we take upon ourselves the posture of being a servant, of not believing that everything in this world is me just getting all that I want, but that instead by saying no on occasion to what I want so I can say yes to what you want, I actually have explored a valuable way to love you well. Jim Carrey, okay, yeah, that Jim Carrey, yeah, like it's a, yeah, I know, it's kind of crazy, right? I saw this quote from Jim Carrey about a year ago. Jim Carrey, right, he's a guy that we'd all say, I'll bet Jim Carrey's doing okay for himself, you know, like I'll bet he's got more success the way we define success than any one of us in this room is probably going to experience. And here's what Jim Carrey said about success and about life of someone who's a quote-unquote success. He says, I think everyone should get rich and famous and do everything that they ever dreamed of so they can see it's not the answer. Okay, now, I would lean on the theological authority of Jesus, okay, but if that doesn't work, the theological authority of Jim Carrey, okay, I'm grasping right here, okay? But I think Jim Carrey's right. The aim of your life and the ultimate in your life isn't just to get everything that you want. Because we've all probably met some people that have a lot of stuff that they want. They have all the power, they have all the fame, they have all the authority, they have all the money, right? And they are still really, really unhappy and really, really unloving. Because to experience love and to experience a love that transforms and shapes and changes me for the better, it means I have to sacrifice. You love you, some you, is not the pathway toward love. You love you, some you, is not the pathway toward love. If you're in this room, you're not a follower of Jesus, I can't hold you accountable to this, okay? I think this is a good way to live. I think that you probably think this is a really good way to live. I know I appreciate it when people live this way with me. But if you're a follower of Jesus, come on, right? Jesus came into this world, and he didn't make it about him. That should tell us something. And because I want this principle to transform and to shape and to change you, okay, I have two principles, two ideas I want you to put in practice. And one is organic, okay, it's kind of grassroots. And one is organized, it's a system I want you to implement into your life, okay? So let's talk about these. The first kind of organic thing is, I just want you to use this question ridiculously often. How can I help? Let's just all practice saying that aloud, okay? 3, 2, 1. How can I help? All right, let's try that again, because the first time I could just tell you hated the idea of saying that. Okay, let's see. 3, 2, 1. How can I help? Excellent. Okay, right? Now, there's something in you that probably, you know, rises up on the inside like it does with me, right? You're like, that sounds like a really great question that I'm terrified to ask, because what if they say something? What if the answer is a no? Yeah, you get to use this once, probably. You have to wait a couple weeks for everyone to forget the sermon. A couple weeks, I humor myself. You have to wait until dinner, you know, when everyone forgets about the sermon. And then you're going to walk into someone's room, and you're going to be like, hey, honey, how can I help? You know, and your wife is going to have, like, a heart attack, right, when she falls on the floor. And you're going to be like, well, I tried, you know, whatever, I did it, you know. Some of you students, you're going to walk up to your parents today, and you're going to say, how can I help? And they're going to call the missing persons hotline, because they're like, I don't know who this child in my house is. It ain't my child, okay? I'm not sure what's going on right now. But asking this question, the thing that scares you about it is the thing that makes it so powerful. Because it is a question that immediately puts you in the posture of a servant. You can't go, hey, how can I help? And then someone gives you a way to help, and they're like, I didn't mean that way. Like, that doesn't work out too well, right? How can I help? And when we ask this question, I think it's a little cue to our heart. It's a little cue to our spirit that signals something to us about, hey, the aim and the end goal of my life isn't just to get whatever it is I want. That there is power in the posture that seeks to serve, not just to be served. And that leads me to the second thing. I want you to purposefully position yourself in a place of service. Okay, I don't want you to just ask the question, how can I help, when I think about it. I actually want you to purposefully place yourself in a position where you consistently help. Okay, we're trying to do this organizationally. I'll just share my little example with you. Okay, earlier I told you about that thing with the church next door, New Covenant Holy Temple. Okay, and they kind of invite us to be a part of this event, and I really feel ashamed to admit this and to say this out loud, but, you know, someone once said sunlight is the best disinfectant, so here we go, okay? My thought as a church leader, when someone asks me to be invited and, like, to help lead our church to be involved with something that their church is doing, is like, well, how are we going to get the credit, you know? Like, what if people go to your church and not to my church, you know? Like, which is so stupid, right? Like, what's the point? You know, like, how selfish is that, right? And so one of the things I think we accomplish by partnering together in this event is it's a way for us to purposefully place ourselves in a position of service to other people. And to say, you know what? This isn't about just getting what I want. Right? This is about serving you and saying, you know, a little bit of a no to myself so I can be a yes to you. Okay? We have, you know, different ministry environments around here at Crossbridge. And the reason we have these ministry environments isn't because there's a service to be provided, right? Kids or helping with slides or sound or whatever it is. The reason we have these ministry environments is because I think it's powerful for you to place yourself in a position of service where you consistently say, hey, I'm going to say no to myself. I'm going to say no to what I'd normally do at this hour so I can say yes to you. All right, I'm going to say no to being a consumer so I can say yes to being a producer. I think it does something really powerful and really helpful and really good for our hearts when we consistently place ourselves in a position where we serve the needs of other people. When we decide how can I help, it's not just something I kind of ask when I feel like it, but I've actually intentionally positioned and postured myself in a way to help, okay? One of the reasons we kind of structure our ministry environments here, organize them, that you have to actually commit to something, is that very idea. Because that's how we form in ourselves the posture of saying, hey, I'm not here just to be served, I'm actually here to be a servant. I'm here to serve others. I'm here to help others. We have a lot of you already are involved in that, right? So, you know, awesome. Yeah, I'm so thankful for that. If you aren't, you've been attending here for a little bit, you know, what's stopping you? Now, I think that's a valuable way that we shape into our lives and into ourselves the image of Jesus. And maybe you, before you leave today, need to pick up one of those connection cards and you need to check off the little contribute by serving box and you need to be a part of hopping in on the team. Because positioning ourselves purposefully in a place to serve is a way in which I deliver a death blow to you love you some you. There's one little verse that Jesus says that I actually left off at the end of our reading, but it's pretty important. Jesus says, for even the Son of Man, that's the name that Jesus used for himself, the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Okay, I just want you to put yourself in the position of Jesus, right? Jesus is up in heaven where I gotta imagine it's really good for everyone. It's especially good if you're Jesus. You know, I don't know if that's theologically accurate or not, but I gotta imagine it's pretty good, okay? And so Jesus decides he sees a need. He sees our sin, right? And he wants to reconnect us with God. So Jesus leaves heaven to come to earth. And he doesn't come to the 21st century Kalarn version of earth, right? You know, he comes to the first century Palestine version of earth where they didn't have things like indoor plumbing, right? Where they didn't have things like Facebook and Twitter, and he couldn't, you know, update his Instagram and be like, oh, I got the Brandon filter. Look how great that looks, you know, and all this kind of stuff, right? Jesus came to a dusty, gritty, gross, messed up world. He came to a place that didn't have representative democracy, okay? He came to a place where their politics and their system was even more messed up than ours is right now, okay? And he came to die. He came to be punished for crimes he didn't commit. He came to take upon, it wasn't just like, you know, some like easy way to go, right? It was crucifixion, you know, like that's not exactly pleasant. And he did it because his posture wasn't to be served. His posture was, how can I help? Because love isn't self-seeking. Because Jesus understood love is just talk until you sacrifice. If you're not a follower of Jesus, again, I can't hold you accountable for that. But if you're a follower of Jesus, come on. This is the whole reason we're here. Right? Typically, when Jesus does something, it's a good pattern for us to do it too. And when we take upon ourselves a posture of selfless service, when we deliver the death blow to, you know, just me and you loving you some you, something beautiful happens. We love. And so I'd love to pray and finish our time together for us to do that. Let's do that.